Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay. Episode 3, go with your gut every time. Y'all, I'm excited. We are finally finished with the tiny house. It is now April 1st. It's April 1st, and we are completely finished. So I want to show y'all how it looks on the inside. I've already started to get it rented out. It's listed on Airbnb. We have guests coming in tomorrow as well. And I've already made my money back, at least for the first month. If you were to break the payments down by month, I've made that back already. So let's go inside and see how it's looking. So starting out, we have obviously a keypad lock. You've got to have a keypad lock on all of your Airbnb listings, but I have one specifically here because I want them to be able to come in by themselves. I don't want to have to meet them for any of that. So that's why I have a keypad on all of my lists. So that's the first feature, y'all. All right. So we're inside. And as y'all remember, it's a Lost in Style tiny house, right? So you step right inside and immediately you are able to get a glance of yourself within the mirror by the door, but then you come by and you're immediately within the living room area. So I decided to go with bright yellow and a deep blue just to kind of begin to bring out the color within this house, because it gets a lot of sunlight, as you can tell. So this is just a living area. You know, they can kick back, pull this over, just a little side table, kick back, you know, chill, and of course, watch TV, because we did put a TV in. So you look immediately across the living area. We have a 32-inch TV, Roku TV, where guests are able to stream. They can set up their HDMI, do whatever they want. Now, right underneath the TV, we have what is called, I call it like the breakfast bar area. I like to leave a couple snacks here. You know, the Cheetos fire for everybody. I like to leave a couple snacks here, and it can fit just about two people right underneath. It's a small space. I don't allow more than two people inside. But it gives them what they need, and gives them what they need to do what they need to do and want to do. Past the breakfast bar, you then step into the kitchen, which it is a full kitchen, right? So we have the sink, we have a fridge, and there is this really nifty and cool induction cooktop. So you can just tap a button on here, choose which one you want to light up, and then literally in like 2 or 3 minutes or less, it fires away. And I definitely recommend this for anyone who's looking to actually get started with their own tiny house as well. These are so dope because really, now since we have air fryers too, you don't need an oven in here on the real, like not at all. So this is good, and then we can put an air fryer in here if they ever wanted to just make something in an oven-like space, especially with a little microwave. And then, of course, coffee for the guests as well. Y'all know that initially I was supposed to be living in here, so I do want to re-clarify that I no longer will be living in this space. And I'm kind of sad about it, too, because unfortunately, I haven't even had a chance to stay in this house one night. Immediately when they got done, it was booked. Like, I listed it on Airbnb before we even finished it completely. Had kind of like some starter photos, and people were still booking. So I haven't been able to stay in this house, but I do want to make it a point to stay in it sometime, at least once within the next couple of months. But we haven't really had any complaints. So again, full sink, full kitchen, and a full fridge that they can just open. I decided not to go with the mini fridge route because eventually, and even right now, I'm starting to look into whether or not I want to begin hosting travel nurses. And typically they'll stay for a couple weeks to a month on end, and they're going to need somewhere to hold all of their goodies, all of their snacks, food, all of that. So I wanted to make sure that we have a full fridge within here. Now, behind this beautiful barn door that you all saw me saying is our full bathroom. So you come in here, and we have a full bathroom. So you all have seen me stand within this space before when it was not finished, and we didn't have the toilet, didn't have the sink, all of that. Now it is completely finished. We got a cute little mirror, fixtures, all of that within here. And then obviously the toilet, got the two-button flush. We don't do the side button no more. Two-button flush, and of course these amazing and beautiful glass doors. Glass doors were honestly, glass shower doors were a must within this bathroom in particular, because I knew that if I did any other door, it was going to feel extremely small in this space. So I wanted to make sure that it was glass, and that I also had, again, more light coming through with the window that we have within the shower as well. And we haven't had any complaints from guests. The house on this side actually faces to the back, and there's just more greenery and forest, so not too much to worry about as far as people peeking in and looking. Now, that is the bathroom, and you've seen the kitchen, you've seen the living room, and you're probably wondering, where's the bed? Where the hell are people sleeping, right? So, we come around here to this ladder, again, that I've stained as well, and this is how the guests are actually going to get up to the loft area where they can then sleep. So I call it a sleeping area rather than a bedroom because it's not a room, it's just a loft. So you can come up here. They'll climb up. The clearance is, you know, all right, but I have had a grown man stay in here already that booked. He was one of the first guests, and he was about 6'1", and he was all right up here, and he said he liked it. So we come up, and there's a bed up here. We have the queen mattress, and then it's really, we also made it a point to add an outlet up here as well. So I won't get in the bed because we have a guest coming tomorrow, and that's unsanitary. However, it is a queen mattress that I have up here, so guests are able to come up here, bring their phones, and then I was hoping that we would be able to make it to where they're up here and they can also see the TV, but unfortunately with the way the bed is, they can't do that unless they decide that they want their heads to be this way and then their feet to be that way, and they can kind of see it here. But that's really the only downside to it. We did make sure to make this area carpeted. Just so that it feels a little more cozy, because if you guys are not familiar, I brand all of my Airbnbs. So the first one that I have that you guys might have seen within episode 1 is the Cozy Escape. The other one that I have about a couple blocks away is called the Boutique Escape, and then I decided to name this one the Cove Escape. So more of like a small cove, beach house type of vibe is what we're getting within here. So that's everything regarding bedroom, living room, and then of course, I wanted to make sure that we had a little bit of space within here as well. So even though I couldn't get all of the storage space that I wanted initially, which is why I'm not staying in the house anymore, I did want to make sure that we have a full closet. So within this full closet, this is where I keep cleaning supplies. So broom, mop, all of that good stuff, in addition to just laundry and linens for my cleaners. Again, I never want to have to meet anyone here. I want them to just come in, let themselves in, and be able to do whatever they need to do. So we've equipped it with iron, ironing board. We have a small handheld vacuum, a couple extra sheets and blankets for the guests as well. So they can see all of that, get in there, and then quickly close it, and it hides everything right there. And the kitchen is where more or the rest of the storage space that we have is. So right up underneath here, just to give you an idea of how spacious the cabinets are, I'm able to fit like all of my tissues, all of the paper towels right within this cabinet here, and that's where we put it. Within this one, there's a couple extra snacks that we leave out for guests, some waters, and then of course we have the pots and pans, dishes, and then right underneath the kitchen sink is where we have a few more of the cleaning supplies as well. So it's really a full house, like seriously a full house. And I'm excited to stay in here myself just to get a day to kind of feel it out, see how it is actually showering in the shower, staying in the bed. But right now, the guests are absolutely loving it. So what we're going to go in, and I'm going to show you guys my numbers as far as right now what I've been able to make since listing it. I listed it, we had our first guest, I believe, on the 13th or 14th. So it's been about 2 weeks. It is the first, it's been 2 weeks exactly. So we're gonna look at those numbers and see how we're doing. And it's looking good, I will say, but it's also feeling good. So we're gonna hop into that. Okay, so we are talking numbers. We are talking the entire experience with building all of this. And then why the hell this entire build for this tiny house that is less than 300 square feet took so long. This entire build in total took nearly 6 months. And just to give you some insight into why it took so long, right? First, I will take some accountability and then I'm going to put the blame on other people. Number one, I should have done better research or more in-depth research in regards to who I brought on my team for the build. Now, I did do that research, I will say, and I had rendered services from someone who was very credible, not someone, an organization who was very credible, and then they were kind of dragging their feet, and because I was so gung-ho on getting this listed by the end of 2020, and it still didn't even get listed by the end of 2020, I ended up not going with them and waiting when they were available, and then I went with someone else, and the other contractors that I then went with had no idea what the hell they were doing. They definitely looked the part. They looked the part in regards to saying that they knew what they were doing. They could probably do some handyman work. But to build an entire house, they were not qualified at all. So after that, because you all saw it in episode one, episode two, fired the first set of contractors. A second set then came through. Second set of contractors came through, and this is the piece that's the hardest with being in real estate how I am and being a woman, a young woman, because sometimes people just, they want to take advantage, and this is a male-dominated field. And then even furthermore, in terms of contractors, they're typically male as well. So it was a lot of, with the second contractors, it was really a matter of, like, it just became inappropriate. I guess he was attracted to me, and then feelings got involved, not in that way, but just his feelings were a little hurt when I then brought one of my homies to come and ask him about the numbers in regards to, are we actually doing this within budget? Is this actually a credible number that you're giving me? Because looking back on it now, and after I did bring my friend out, I was being overcharged extremely. And because I had already fired the first contractors, I was willing to just pay some money to get it done and try to get it completed and finished. And he slightly took advantage of that. So nonetheless, I'm very happy to be finished now, but that is one of the primary reasons that it really took so long. And not only did we go over budget, but we were very much behind schedule. So that was that entire experience. Now, starting out from the beginning, this entire inception of the tiny house came, I would say, gosh, like Q2 of 2020. Sometime during Q2, while quarantine had just happened, I was trying to figure out how I wanted to continue to expand my business, and then even furthermore, just utilize the space in my backyard. So I decided to go the tiny house route. Again, did a lot of research, and I have a ton of documentation. So if you are interested in that information, you can shoot me an email. I'll include my email in the description. But you can shoot me an email. I'll send you that information. But I did a ton of research. I have a ton of spreadsheets, documents, all of that. And I pretty much designed all of this, which that is the main piece that's making me so happy to be sitting in this house right now, is because I designed where the closet was going to go, to the loft. The measurements of everything came from my own mind. So to sit here now in a house that is completely functional, completely livable, and is now making me money, and I'm able to pay my rent, pay my mortgages at other places, it's dope. It's just so crazy, honestly. So, so crazy. So that's been the overall experience. And I know the main question that people are really looking at is, how much did you spend on this? So I will give y'all exact numbers, and I'll give you what, at the beginning, how much money I had anticipated or budgeted for, and then how much we actually ended up spending. All of it, I will say, some people look at losing money, and they look at it like a loss. They look at it, you know, as a bad thing. And losing money is bad, but I will say that it's like I never try to look at anything as a loss, even though very much in the moment, when everything was hitting the fan and the contractors were not working out, I was crying tears all the time. Y'all saw it in the videos. Even with all of that, I still feel like this was just a huge lesson learned, because this was my first build, and I'm glad that I was able to do this and create this house, and it's a smaller scale, right? Because I do want to start doing this on a larger scale with full houses, single-family homes, maybe multi-units and things like that. So that's where we're at with it. Now, when we're looking at financials, what I had expected, right? So initially, this build was supposed to take 4 to 6 weeks. Which, looking back on it now, with everything that we have in here, everything that needed to be done, and then on top of that, everything that was on my plate at the time, 4 to 6 weeks was a very aggressive timeline. Now, that's what we expected it to take. It actually ended up taking 20 weeks for this entire build to be completed, from the start of actually getting the shed delivered and digging in, digging down the lines, to actually hitting publish on Airbnb. Now, aside from that, initially you all know that this was also supposed to be my personal space. I wanted to live in the backyard of the main house that I Airbnb, and then just be able to, you know, tend to guests as I please, and also downsize on everything that I have and kind of live a minimalist lifestyle. That didn't work out because we ended up being over budget, and I needed a place to stay ASAP. So at that point, and then on top of that, with the contractors, the first set of contractors promised me a ton of space, a ton of storage. They were able to build this, do that, extra closets, hidden storage, all kinds of things. And when I fired them, the actual contractors that then came in, who were credible, it's not possible, or it wasn't possible with where my budget was trying, with where my budget stood at the moment. So that's where we were with it, and now you all know that I am posting on Airbnb, and this is now my third listing. So now that this is my third listing, it is up, and we're good. So from expected to actual, expected time to build, 4 to 6 weeks, actual was 20 weeks, and then even furthermore, the expected goal was for me to stay here. Now we are actually just using this as an Airbnb unit. Now, when we're looking at numbers and financials, right, I will just say the overall number first, and then I'm going to dive into what some of this means. I expected or had budgeted for about $25,000 to $29,000 to be spent on this tiny house, which is still cheap. It's on the cheaper end for a tiny house, because tiny houses on average can run you between, I would say, depending on like something like this that's updated and renovated, can run you anywhere from like $35,000 to $50,000. So my $25,000 to $29,000 was still on the lower end, which I'm glad I did, because what we actually spent, JP's going to put it on the screen, what we actually spent is $34,847.05 to a T is what we spent. And when I'm looking at how much over budget that is, that's about $5,000 to $9,000 over budget. Now, understanding that the second contractors had to completely demolish the bathroom, and then I have gone through a set of, like, three sets of contractors, when you look at the discrepancy between those two, it's honestly not too bad for as many things that had gone wrong with this house, from the plumbing to having to rerun the electric lines, demo the bathroom, like, all of that. So when I look at the $34,000, I look at it in terms of the average one costs about $35,000 to $50,000. I'm still on the lower end of what that average price for a tiny house is. So I'm feeling good. Okay, so looking at numbers in terms of what we are doing now with the tiny house, now that you know what's been going on, you know how I've been able to get everything up, running, what are the numbers looking like now that we are 2 weeks out? Now that it's been rented, I think two or three weeks. We got started renting it on March 13th, which is also my birthday, and that's when we had our very first guest. And then today is April 1st, and between that time, so between March 13th and April 1st, this tiny house right now, it was booked. It was not completely booked for all of those days. I think we had about four or five open days, but the income earned from that at this point is $1,185.43, which I'm really happy about, because right now, as you guys know, I bought the shed outright. So when buying the shed outright, if you break it down in terms of how much the monthly payment would have been for it, it was around, I would say, I think $418 when I spread it out, about $418. So the fact that we are at $1,185.43, and this house does not have any bills. So now that I've spent all of the money to get it built, I've spent the money to purchase the structure, there are no bills. So everything that I am now earning is going either into my pocket or into what I am now paying off on my credit cards, based on what we have going on. So how that number came about, because right now, the tiny house is currently listed for about $79 a night on average, and that is also in addition to the cleaning fee that is, I believe, $65 or $80, one of the two. I'll have to double check. But that is where we're at. So there have been five bookings thus far, and most people typically do tend to stay, I'm finding, within this house at least two or three nights. It's a lot of couples. I've had some individuals who are just in town for work book it as well, and that's what we're starting to get. But as mentioned earlier, I am looking at the numbers, running it to see whether or not it would be lucrative for me to host nurses or travel nurses within the tiny house, or actually just keep it on Airbnb. And my only hesitation with that is because part of me feels like I can make more money just renting it out on Airbnb. However, I still need to think about the fact that when I'm doing Airbnb, there's a constant turnover, which means that I'm paying for cleanings as well. Now, the cleanings for the tiny house are not that expensive, but the more bookings that you have, the more that it adds up. So the benefit of actually going the travel nurse route would be that they would be in here for weeks on end, or months on, or month or two on end, and at that point, my cleaner wouldn't have to come back. I would not have to pay my cleaner to come, and I would be getting all of that money, and there would be one cleaning before and then one cleaning after, and they would do the cleaning on the interior following that. So I'm excited, because within those days, like I said, if you add up all of the days that we were booked, I think it was about 12 days out of the 14 or 15 that it's been, I believe, I got to look at the numbers to make sure I'm giving y'all the right thing. But nonetheless, my goal for the whole month or a month, each month this year with the Airbnb moving forward is to do at least $3,000. The fact that I was able to do that almost $1,200 within those couple of days, within those 2 weeks that we've been on Airbnb, I know that I should be able to run it up because I'm also just now listing it at a introductory price. So that $79 a night is not going to stay. It will increase, and especially since we are now in the summer months as well, it's definitely going to increase a little more, and it's going to have some more traffic once we add the outdoor amenities that are here as well. Now, aside from the tiny house, I want to kind of dive into the numbers overall for Airbnb with all of my listings, because if I recall, I believe it was episode 2, I showed you all the numbers that I had made at the end of 2020. And at the end of 2020, I believe I was right about, I did end up hitting my $50,000 goal, and I realized I hit it because there were a few reservations that I actually rendered or took off of the Airbnb platform, and they paid me either via Zelle, Cash App, or what have you. Those are for separate reasons, but nonetheless, now within 2021, we are in April, it's April 1st, I am already slated to make, I don't know if y'all can see it, but the expected earnings right now is about $22,500 already, and we are only in April. So I know now that I have this listing, and then even furthermore, I've placed the other listing that I have back on Airbnb, that number is going to go up even more, because during Q1, the only listing that I actually had was one property, because this was not finished yet, and then I was staying in my second property due to some other reasons. So now that I have all three that are active and listed, my goal for this whole year is $100,000 on Airbnb from these listings, and I'm hoping to acquire at least one or two more prior to the end of the year to add to my portfolio. So at this point, the Q1 total earnings for Mobley, so for the Cozy Escape, plus the slight money or the $1,200 that we've made from the tiny house during the month of March, that is equal to about $15,516.43. So that is the total Q1 earnings. Now, in order for me to hit the goal that I wanted to hit, and my laptop just went dead, so we about to freestyle it. In order for me to get the goal that I actually wanted to hit, I would have had to make I was expecting to make at least $25,000 or wanting to hit $25,000 each quarter. Now, obviously, I did not hit that mark. I missed it right by about $9,600, if I recall my numbers correctly. So now what I've done is I've cascaded that about $9,600 across the remaining three quarters to figure out how much it is that I need to make each quarter moving forward. Now that now is right around $28,000. And if I can be completely honest with you all, I'm ready. I'm ready to do it, and I feel like we can hit it. I feel like I will hit it. And when I do, I'm going to get back on here and I'm going to show y'all that I hit it. So that's where we're at with all of the Airbnb numbers. So this entire docuseries is sponsored by Airbnb Money, and Airbnb Money is the platform I created to pretty much teach and show people the journey that I've gone through with my Airbnb. So listing in my houses, my apartments, the tiny house, and then actually making money and being able to fund my lifestyle, fund my living with that. So you can find Airbnb at Airbnb Money on Instagram. And just last month, we actually released an ebook, the Airbnb Money ebook, which is the complete guide to starting, managing, and optimizing your Airbnb business. Included in there is like budgeting, figuring out which type of property you want to list, where is the best locations to begin listing that, communicating with guests, automating your systems, finding cleaners. It's 50 pages, 10 chapters of tons of information related to my own journey with getting started. So you can find all of that information at the Airbnb Money Instagram. And then I just want to close y'all out with the top three lessons I learned from all of this, right? So number one, first lesson, you need to find a mentor within this space. Finding a mentor is going to help you in terms of guiding you with the decisions that you're making. My biggest mistake was not having a mentor or at least someone who could serve as a sounding board for the decisions that I was making. And that definitely came to bite me in the long run because now I'm paying for that literally and figuratively with the money out of my pocket. Lesson number two is you need to make sure that you are paying your contractors in draws. What do I mean by draws? Draws is paying the contractors for work completed, work that they have completed or will complete in that specific time period. Not necessarily paying them half up front and then half later when they're done, but pay them. If you gonna paint, okay, cool, I'm gonna pay you to paint, and once you paint, then we're gonna look at what I need to pay you next. But you need to pay them as they complete the work, because the first set of contractors, I nearly paid them all of the money that I was slated to pay them, and then I had to get the entire thing, the entire bathroom demoed. They did none of it right, get the walls redone. It was just a fucking mess. So pay and draws. And the last and final lesson that I have for you is to just go with your fucking gut every single time. Had I gone with my gut, not even just in terms of this bill, but just over the last 12 months in general, with a lot of the decisions that I've made, the things that I've done, the experiences that I've endured, had I gone with my gut initially, I would have saved myself a lot of stress. I would be in a much better position. And it's not necessarily to say that I'm not in a good position right now, because I very much am, but I would be in a better position had I trusted myself from the jump. So that's what y'all need to do. So those are my top three lessons I have to just leave y'all with. If you want to keep up with me, you can keep up with me at Precious C. Price across all platforms. I tweet, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, and you can keep up with the entire journey of the tiny houses and then me even furthermore acquiring more properties at the Airbnb Money Instagram. It's just at Airbnb Money, and make sure y'all grab that ebook for real. I will include the link within the description to grab all of that. And yeah, if you have any questions, let me know down below in the comments. And please, please, please be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to my YouTube channel, because you can expect a lot more information pertaining to business, money, as well as Airbnb on there as well. So thank y'all. We are finished. Done. Finito.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash, This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat. I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively. And you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
The goose that laid golden eggs. One day, a poor farmer suddenly got a goose. It was a special goose that laid one golden egg every day.
My heavens, this is unbelievable. The egg is gold. Ha ha ha!
The poor farmer decided to sell the eggs. And soon after, he became rich.
That's a good goose. Keep laying those golden eggs.
The farmer became very greedy. He was now already rich, but he wanted to become even richer.
How come the goose lays only one egg a day? There's no way I'm going to become really rich like this. There must be a way to collect a bunch of golden eggs at one time.
The farmer became so greedy that all he thought about was getting richer.
Oh, I bet there are a bunch of golden eggs inside the goose's belly. I bet if I cut open his belly, I could get them all out at once.
So the greedy farmer cut open the goose's belly, but there were no golden eggs inside. In fact, there was nothing inside.
Oh, how could I have been so foolish? My greed has caused me to lose everything now.
At that moment, the farmer understood what he had done, but it was too late, because the goose was now dead, and there were no more golden eggs.
Oh, my poor egg!
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texarkana, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, the Beach Lake. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Omaha, Shepherdville, Jacksonville, Waterville, Coast, Arima, Pittsfield, Springfield, Bakersfield, Surrey, Port Hackensack, Cadillac, Fond du Lac, Davenport, Idaho, Jellicoe, Argentina, Diamantina, Pasadena, Catalina, Sea, Guatemala. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Pittsburgh, Parkersburg, Gravelburg, Colorado, Ellensburg, Rexburg, Vicksburg, Eldorado, Larimore, Atmore, Havistraw, Chattanooga, Chaska, Nebraska, Alaska, Opelika, Baraboo, Waterloo, Kalamazoo, Kansas City, Sioux City, Cedar City, Dodge City, what a pity, I've been everywhere. travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been everywhere.
That's pretty neat, Doc.
Here, Johnny Cash is up and everywhere.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Okay, we're ready for another installment of It's My House. And today, we're announcing an activity that some of you guys out there might be interested in participating in, depending on what part of the world you're in. We have a general term, It's My House Live Events, but we have one of those live events is Black Wall Street Live. And what that particular live event is now, for people who can't make it to these locations, they can participate online. But for those who can make it in person, we'll be doing various activities in a black town or Black Wall Street, and for instance, like in Illinois, you have a handful of black townships in historical black townships in the state of Illinois, like Pembroke, Hopkins Park in particular. That's thought off the top of my head. And
I can hear you.
So we'll have people that if you want to learn how to build a house, you can learn how to do that. If you want to learn how to sew or make quilts, these are things that they were doing over 100 years ago, but you can still do today. So anyway, I got a guest on this morning, Pleasant Stephens. Good morning, Pleasant.
Good morning, Dr. L.A.
Well, with Infinity, what are some of the things that people can learn if they attend one of your live events?
Well, what we teach is sewing, practically everything that you can use that you have access to.
Mm-hmm.
It's industry that you may have never been used to.
Right.
So it can be, what we really call it is that we teach anything from shoestrings to,
shoestrings, anything.
Anything. Shoestrings to anything. Yeah, that's a good title for it.
Now, most people, well, I don't know what the percentage is, but a whole lot of people don't know how to make anything. And we're talking about outside the kitchen.
And then
a whole lot of people don't know how to cook either. But anyway, let's say outside the kitchen. Why do you think that is? Why, like, you know, slaves, they made their own clothes. They made other people's clothes. They built houses. They built a whole lot of things. So what do you think has happened over the last 100 years where many people, dramatically a lot less people, know how to make anything?
Well, I think what has happened is something like telephones. If the idea of producing or making something has been stripped away from people because they haven't been taught. And we got into this, I would say that we got into the lane of somebody teaching us how to do something that of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an interest in something. We could learn it. And computers was a big part of that because if you are using a computer, all you do is just type, you got the letters right before you. And you just type in the letters what you want. So that takes away your knowledge of learning how to spell. So if you don't have to, I would say, house what you're going to type or what you're going to write, you forget. Your mind just will not retain it.
Right. Right.
So a lot of us, the stuff that we made years ago, we can't make today because we haven't did what? We haven't followed through on teaching our children how to produce.
That's true.
So, so if you tell your child that you want them to make shoestrings, they don't know how to make a shoestring. Why should they? They can go to the store and pick up a shoestring.
Right. Well, in that case, the shoestrings, the shoes, the socks,
yeah,
the pants, the dress, the skirt, the jacket, the suit.
Yeah. The
people are, so we've gone from, everybody consumes something, but we've gone from producers, high producers to zero producers to essentially consumers.
Consumers. That's where we turn into consumers. We consume what somebody else makes. And there are other countries other than the United States that are producing product in the year. Tell somebody to pull up their collar on the shirt that they're wearing and look at the name on it. It'll say it's from China or some other country.
Right.
It won't say America. Now,
yeah,
that makes you
true.
Work. And that makes you work. Because we've got to the place to where we do not produce anything. So that's what we're stuck. We're not producers of anything because we are dependent. We are dependent on somebody else producing. Okay, here's a good one for you. What about the diapers? When did we start making diapers for babies?
Man, I don't know. People these days, a lot of them to a high degree buy Pampers.
Pampers. What does Pampers do? Pampers stop you from doing what?
Soiling yourself, yeah.
Stop you from making diapers.
Right.
Yeah. Because somebody has told you, oh, you don't have to make a diaper. You can buy Pampers from a store, and it'll cost you four times as much as making a diaper. But you can go and drop it in the wash machine, and wash. You don't wash them anymore.
Right.
You drop it.
Throw it in the trash.
Drop it. Throw it in the trash. So we've got to be vigilant enough to understand why we are not non-producers anymore. We just don't produce anything because we haven't been taught.
Hmm.
And when we were producing product, we said that we was upholding to people that, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. This ain't for me. Well, everything is for you after consumption. Everything that's being consumed is for you to produce.
Well, let me play this real clip, this clip right here, and get your opinion on it.
Brother break bread with me, brother. Got that pure cake, no butter, no sugar. Asiatic, straight like my brother's soul. Yes, indeed. 7-Up cake, we got pound cake. And we...
Some of that pound cake.
Yes, indeed, brother. There you go. Thank you, brother. You have a good day today. Salam.
Today I begin a new life. For I am the master of my abilities. And today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
What?
I said, today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
Pillows, goose down, $35.
see you a buyer or something.
What? Videos, homie. Videos? DVD? CD? Masterpiece? Charlie's Angel?
Look at yourself.
How many millionaires you got on, bruh? I count at least three. Man, what the fuck are you talking about? Pete, look around, man. See what I see? I see money. Look at my man over there selling t-shirts. Brother over there selling pies and paper. Cake man over there. Everybody moving, making money, right? While we standing still being broke. I figured all this shit out, man. All this. This whole world moves forward through transactions. Commerce, nigga. The exchange of goods and services. All the real baller successful folks are sellers. And all the broke-ass people playing catch-up are buyers. I ain't trying to go out like that, Pete. I'm going to be a seller. I'm going to get my own business. Change the game.
Now, that clip was from the movie Baby Boy, and one statement that he made that really struck me was, how many millionaires are you wearing? So whoever made those shoestrings more than likely is a multimillionaire to the socks, to the every stitch of clothes that you have on your body. And something I just looked up, Procter & Gamble, the Procter & Gamble Pampers that they make, they are made in China. And Procter & Gamble is a German company, by the way. So anyway, Pleasant, your thoughts on how many millionaires are you wearing? Or anybody wearing?
Well, they got away from us. We've gotten away. Not they. We've gotten away from practically everything we put on our back. We used to make our suits. Our mothers made all of our clothes. My mother made all of my clothes when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And when did I get a suit? I don't know how old I was when I got a suit that my mother didn't make.
Yeah, we've gotten away from all that. Now we're buying other people's suits, Brooke Brothers suits, Gucci, and all these other people.
Yeah. Now, you know, since I've been, I would say, handicapped to the point to where I've been catching a bus or driving a car or doing this or that or the other, I asked the ladies because of what I'm doing to get trying to get back into my manufacturing business.
Mm-hmm.
I asked practically every driver to bring me home or take me there, do whatever. I asked, you know of anybody that can make it? Make a shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And first thing I did is no. I don't know if anybody that sews. But if you don't sew, you can't make anything.
Right.
If you don't sew, you can't make anything. Can't make shoestrings.
What? I never thought about it that way, but you're right.
No.
Matter of fact, yeah, something, you know, that's something, an item that a lot of people take for granted, a shoestring.
Yeah. Shoestring. Just reach down and sew it up.
I'm looking that up now.
And you know what else we don't make? We don't make toothpicks.
Yeah.
We don't make toothpicks. Why? Frankly, all the old people like my age use toothpicks. I haven't seen the toothpick made by us yet. How many people using toothpick and how many millionaires are making them?
You know what? I'm looking up shoelaces, as they call them.
Yeah.
Now, you know, a lot of people like to buy these Air Jordan tennis shoes, athletic shoes.
Yeah.
Which cost, I don't know, $200-$300. I've never owned a pair of them. But whoever's got the contract to make the shoelaces for those, they're a millionaire.
They're millionaires.
Just on, you know what? Now I need to look up how to make shoelaces.
How to make shoelaces? They're a millionaire. How to make the toothpicks? They're millionaires. Let's go a little deeper than that. Let's look at the people that's how to make the machine that make the toothpicks. They're millionaires.
Man.
The people that knows how to make the machine is millionaire.
People, see, these are some of the things that we're going to be showing people how to do in these live events. Imagine now the police department? Matter of fact, hold it. Let me look up, because you're up in Chicago. So let's see. How many police in the Chicago police department? Because they got a pretty big department. Police.
Yeah. But let's look at this. Are the police wearing any clothes that we need?
No. Not that I know of.
Then what are we talking about when we talk about we're going to create some jobs?
Oh, listen to this, Pleasant. The Chicago Police Department, it has approximately 12,000 officers plus 1,925 other employees.
Would you like to have the contract to make the clothes?
Man, any part of that. I'll take the shoestring
Now, are you talking about creating jobs for these people that you get out of tax dollars as employment?
Right.
Are we paying the people that we elect to office to create jobs that we are employing? And every time they talk about tax, they want to raise our tax that where we live?
Well, you know.
And we say that they're educated.
Boy, 12. For all practical purposes, we're talking about 14,000 employees.
Yeah. And how many type of offices do you have? You got the sheriff department, police department.
Mm-hmm.
How many departments are there that's supposedly policing our country?
Oh, God knows. You know what? That's another good number.
FBI.
How many police departments?
How many police departments? How many police departments are police in our country?
All right. How many police departments?
How many of those jobs is shipped overseas?
Um, All right, the total number of, there are 697,195 full-time law enforcement officers in the United States. Now, how many police departments, though?
But they're going to create a job for us and our children?
Some of these people who have these gangs out here, they need to start, they're in the wrong business. They need to get into the business of making clothes for the police and selling it to the police department instead of getting arrested by the police.
That's right. I think those.
Well, you know, you got your local city police, then you got the state police, then you got border control, FBI, DEA. You got all, that's thousands of people right there.
That's right.
We're not even gonna get into equipment and all this, but just the clothes aspect.
Yeah.
So, like, say, when we do these live events, people can learn. Man, this puts a whole new. And then you know what? Every few years, depending on with the times, people change uniforms. You know,
that's
they upgrade.
Yeah,
because the police, the uniform that they're wearing now, probably wasn't the same 50, or definitely wasn't the same as 100 years ago.
No. They won't last out there.
Yeah, so.
Okay, but let's go back a little bit deeper than that. What are the clothes made of?
I guess that's a good question. Cotton or polyester? I don't know.
How do the cloth get to the machines that make the clothes?
If you're going from cotton, you got to grow that.
You got to grow it. So how many people do that in cloth?
Yeah, that's true.
And what's that step that they took out of the United States and said it was illegal, then they brought it back?
Oh, yeah, marijuana.
No. It's not marijuana. It's something like cotton, but it's better than cotton.
Hemp?
We used to make clothes out of hemp. Do we do that anymore? Not on a large scale, we don't. But I haven't been made in other countries? Yes, it is.
Now, New York City has a police force of over 36,000 people.
How many people do you think that is employed in the United States?
Well, overall, I think it's probably close to 700,000 people. Actually, you may as well just put it at a million.
Million folks. Would we have to raise tax if we had that many people working?
Well, they're already working. But you're talking about the people that...
consuming our product.
Right. Well, people, if you want to get a piece of the shoelace industry... Or the, clothing
yep.
for the police departments.
If you want a piece of the dye, the neckties and the ties that we wear,
that's true, because many police, depending on the force, some police officers do have ties, particularly the officers.
They wear a tie every day.
Yeah. They got some uniform men with ties, and then you got detectives, unless they're undercover. They wear ties, like you said, every day.
Yeah, every day. I think we got a big job to do, is to actually come around and teach and train the people that we're employing to be our security. I think we have to teach and to train them and have a model, if necessary, that they have to, if you want to live in the United States, you have to employ the people in the United States.
Right. I'm looking at a picture of a Massachusetts State Police trooper. Now, in this particular picture, he's wearing white gloves, so somebody made those.
That's
he's
right.
wearing a hat, and somebody made those hats. The
yeah.
hat has, like, some trim or medallions on it. Somebody made those.
Yep.
He's got a jacket. Belt, pockets, striped trousers, boots.
Yeah.
Of course, the boots have shoelaces. Buttons. This state trooper is wearing a tie.
Now, why don't we? Why don't we, the public, say that everybody that's being paid without tax, paid to perform their duties, must buy the product from people that's making the product in the United States?
Mm-hmm. What is, like I say, they have government contracts for all this.
All right, but the government is getting this stuff from where? China.
Yeah, China or...
some other country.
Some other country.
Yeah.
And I guess there's a handful of American countries in there somewhere, but... you're right, a lot of it's done outside the United States.
Outside the United States.
Hmm.
And we're talking about we got crime.
Well, some of these people who have gotten locked up probably need to learn how to sew.
A lot of them need to learn how to sew. Matter of fact, all of them need to learn how to sew if they have a job sewing enough.
Yeah, because that's a basic fundamental. Well, Adam and Eve, when they got kicked out of the Garden of Eden, they had to take a, some might say it's the first industry. They had to learn how to, you know, after they discovered they were naked, the first thing they did was they had to get some fig leaves or whatever
and
sew them together.
Yeah, and cover up.
Yep, that's some say that's the first industry, sewing.
Yeah. I think it's going to take people like yourself and I to bring this industry back to America because they have shifted all out on planes, airplanes, and we have taxed us to death with the housing projects that we're talking about. Right now, we're talking about what is this industry that's causing us to have some kind of thinking a name of what they call it, but it's we're melting everything that's coming around us.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that we burn up all the trees and stuff that we've been talking about putting back on the earth? I think we just went out the world backwards.
Well,
I think that's something else that you and I need to get on board with.
Well, we're going to be organizing. I'm going to let you announce your Zoom call tonight. It was Tuesday. We're going to be organizing various type of offline, well, online as well as offline, hands-on live events where people can learn how to sew various items. You know, first thing, because like I said, I need to learn how to sew myself. I got the machines. I just had to learn how to use them. Sewing.
Hold it. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. You got machines. You got to learn how to use them.
Yeah.
All right. Who made the machines?
Well, the one that's right in front of me is a Singer.
Where are they located?
Huh?
Where are Singer located? What country are they?
You know what? Let me look that up right now. I got another sewing machine that was made in Germany.
Okay. They have to start. They're made in Germany. Ain't no American making no machine in Germany.
Let's see. Okay, Singer Corporation. Okay. Is an American manufacturer of consumer sewing machines, first established by I.M. Singer and Company in 1851 by Isaac M. Singer with the New York lawyer Edward Clark, best known for its sewing machines. It was renamed Singer Manufacturing Company in 1865. And then the Singer Company in 1963. It is based in Laverne, Tennessee, near Nashville. The first large factory for mass production was built in 1863 in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Now, let's see. The owner of the company now is SVP Worldwide, and that's also located in Tennessee. But the company has corporate headquarters located in Nashville, Tennessee, but it is supplemented by regional headquarters and sales located in Milan, Italy, São Paulo, Illinois, Brazil, and Sydney, Australia. It operates in 180 countries.
What do you think they're getting the majority?
Well, I'm sure out of those 180 countries includes countries like China and Vietnam and places like that.
Now, let's do a backdrop. The people that we elected to office, this last time, and 20 times the focus last time, how many of those people have the knowledge of bringing all of that industry that we are looking at right now, bringing all of that industry back to the United States?
Well, thing, but the thing is, like, that's why I play that Claude Anderson piece every morning. A lot of industry people, they donate to their campaign to get the laws the way they want them, I guess.
And who's voting these people in office?
Well, the average man on the street. Now, I'm looking at a picture right now. There's a woman in East Timor. This is in Asia. Actually, there's a whole bunch of them, and they're sewing clothes using Singer sewing machines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at it. It's a picture of four women. Somewhere
now,
in Asia, using Singer sewing machines to make clothes.
That's right. And that's what we can see on the surface. So
that's on the surface.
What we don't see is how did they get to where they are.
Right. And Singer might assemble the machines, but the parts are made elsewhere.
Yeah. The parts are produced someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And the assembly is someplace to where we don't know where it is.
Mm.
But I think where it's not in the hands of production in America.
Mm.
And what do they say? They say the people that own the machine that they took from slavery and moved them out of America because they say it costs too much to make them.
Mm.
Costs too much to make them in America. Well, if it costs too much to make them in America, then how are they shipping them back to America and selling them to the people of consumption?
Hmm.
I think this needs to be brought to the surface. I think what we're talking about needs to be brought to the surface.
Okay.
Need to be brought to the surface and made people aware that the people that we have actually employed from the government people that run the show are selling us down the drain.
Mm.
There's no way to have all of these people unemployed and we are suffering and got homeless folks in America that need employment.
Okay.
And they got it upside down.
Let's see.
We ain't got the bridges, stoplights, and all of the other good stuff that we did. That we made in slavery and we didn't get a piece of it. And hasn't gotten a piece of it yet.
Mm.
But we get locked up so that we can be charged and employ some more people to keep people locked up because we don't have enough money, supposedly, to keep them on the street. But I say let them all out of jail and employ them. Let every one of them out of jail and employ them. We won't have the crime that we got today. Then I said, turn around and the guns that's made, let's take the guns that's made and boom, set them on fire. Well, we don't need guns in America. We don't have elephants and rabbits and squirrels and possums anymore.
Well, yeah, a lot of us, like I said, we're hardcore consumers. Well, Pleasant, you got a call, Zoom call on Tuesday night. Tell us about that.
Well, it's just an extension of what we're talking about today. Is because we have already started to plant seed to feed ourselves. Because there's a market to feed ourselves that's going out of that's going up through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Butter, sugar, molasses, everything is priced too high. Every time my wife goes to the store now, she says, the price went up. The price went up. The price has went up. Since I've been suits, the prices went up about 5 times in the last year. Now, don't we need to start producing that food here in America for us to eat and to survive?
Well, as Viata said last week, at one time, about 100 plus years or so ago, many people had, well, their grocery store was in their backyard. So basically what you and your wife are doing is you're reestablishing your own personal grocery store.
Yeah,
maybe not with all the items that you consume, but some of them.
Some of them we're taking and putting back in our grocery stores in our backyard.
Mm-hmm. And that way it's a fresher food with no chemicals and all that stuff.
No chemical.
Mm. Okay. Oh, what time is that call tonight, Pleasant? That Zoom
7 o'clock.
7 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Yep, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, and we invite everybody that has, that somebody that want to listen to what we have to say and have an input of what they think is a better way of doing things, because we are open for suggestions.
Good. All right, well, we'll be mentioning a lot more about these live events that will be held in various locations. So on that note, Pleasant, we're going to end it for today. Thanks for coming on and talking with me, and looking forward to the Zoom call tonight. Everyone have a good rest of the day.
Thank you very much.